The Books, Part 2.
This knowledge, once mastered, enabled the Egyptians to build the pyramids, erect temples with amazing feats of skill, and plan city complexes with running water, sewage systems, and hot baths. The authors, however, do feel that the Divine Book of Wisdom and Enoch's writings may not be the entire source of wisdom possessed by the ancients. We will address this issue in the chapter titled, The Lost Civilization of Atlantis. Among the Egyptians were societies that practiced magic and divination to the point that they were masters of the craft. All these skills were learned by the magicians from ancient texts. According to the Westcar Papyrus, during the time of the pharaoh Khufu, one magician, known simply as Jeddah, gained legendary renown for successfully reattaching severed heads to animals. Among the Hebrews, this knowledge or secret wisdom had been passed down from Abraham to King Solomon and taught in their school of the prophets. Moses, no doubt, was a contributor of knowledge to this school, having learned much in the Egyptian universities. Slowly, at one time, some very valuable records were transferred from the Sun Temple at Heliopolis to the School of Prophets, perhaps under Moses' order. Later, these records were carried to the eastern parts of Tibet, maybe to a monastery, and supposedly continue to exist there in a hidden underground vault. The knowledge of flight may have been learned from the ancient texts by the Hebrews. According to an ancient Ethiopian text, the Kebra Nagast, or Glory of the Kings, Solomon possessed some kind of airship, which he could fly great distances. The writing states that Solomon had a heavenly car, which he inherited from his forefather, King David, and used frequently. The king and all who obeyed his word flew on the wagon without pain and suffering and without sweat or exhaustion, and traveled in one day a distance which took 3 months to traverse on foot, says the Kebra Nagas, translated by Sir E.A. Wallace Budge, 1932, from Dover, London. According to the Russian-American explorer Nicholas Rorich, there are Central Asian legends of King Solomon journeying in an airship to Tibet. Obviously, this knowledge was lost when Solomon's temple was destroyed. According to Genesis 13, Abraham was very rich in cattle and silver and in gold. Where did he get the silver and gold? Did he use the knowledge contained in the sacred manuscripts to produce these precious metals from ordinary base metals? The Kabbalah texts suggest that he did. In the final stanza of Sefer Yetzirah, it says, quote, when Abraham looked and probed, he was successful in creation, close quote. This passage clearly suggests that Abraham created things using methods found in the Sefer Yetzirah. More scriptural evidence is provided in Genesis 12, which states, Abraham went as God had told him, and Abraham took the souls that they had made in Haran. According to some Kabbalah teachings, this indicates that Abraham actually used the power of Sefer Yetzirah to create people, or, as some have interpreted, great golems, soulless beings, to do the work. Do the manuscripts of the Divine Book of Wisdom still exist? There is much evidence that suggests that they do indeed exist today, or at least scribed copies of the original scrolls. Remember the 18 ships that escaped from La Rochelle with the Templars' treasure? It appears that at least one of the ships sailed to Scotland, where some of the Templars took refuge in an abbey called the Kilwinning, an early strong post and major center for Templar power. The Pope had excommunicated the Scottish king, Robert the Bruce, making it a safe haven for the Knights Templar. Shortly afterward, part of the Templars' treasure was used in the construction of the Roslin Chapel near Edinburgh. William St. Clair, a Knights Templar and last Prince of Orkney, began building the tiny chapel about 1446, and it was completed sometime after his death in 1484. The extraordinary architecture on the outside bristles with flying buttresses and medieval gargoyles in its highest style of florid Gothic. The chapel interior is profusely carved with biblical scenes depicting the fall of man, the expulsion from the Garden of Eden, the birth of Christ, the crucifixion and the resurrection, hundreds of exquisitely carved animals, fruit, leaves, and figures cover the pillars and arches. One of the things the Knights Templar found in the ruins of Solomon's Temple was a drawing of the heavenly city Jerusalem. The drawing was in the Gothic style and resulted in an explosion of Gothic-style cathedrals being built all over Europe by the Freemasons. Roslyn Chapel was one of these Gothic structures. William St. Clair was a Templar and Freemason. There is a carving on the wall outside Roslyn that depicts a Freemason ceremony with candidate blindfolded and with a noose around his neck. A Templar, with the cross on his tunic, is holding the rope to the noose of the candidate. It is believed that the building of Roslyn marks the first advent of Freemasonry in the United Kingdom. During the construction of the chapel in 1447, a fire occurred that caused William St. Clair to become frantic until he learned from his chapel that the four great trunks full of charters, could have been manuscripts or scrolls, were safe and sound. According to the record, he became cheerful. We can say with some certainty that these trunks contained described books, manuscripts, charters, or scrolls that comprised the Book of Divine Wisdom. Perhaps other books that Enoch wrote and maps of the world discussed in upcoming chapters. Roslyn Chapel was built as a shrine to house and protect these manuscripts. The source of the ancient knowledge of the Babylonians, Sumerians, Egyptians, Sufis, Freemasons, and Rosicrucians. Somewhere in a sealed vault, perhaps under the floor, in a hollow column, the apprentice pillar, or concealed in the altar itself, hidden yet, accessible and safe, these forgotten records may still lie in that chapel. Even the name Roslyn in Scottish Gaelic denotes meaning. Ros means knowledge, and Lyn means generation. Translated in modern Gaelic, it would be ancient knowledge passed down the generations. Copies of some, if not all, of these records probably lie in the hands of the Grand Master Masons of Freemasonry and Rosicrucians, not available to the lower order initiates. It takes years of disciplined study, devotion, and probation to understand some of these texts. Most have to be translated into other languages for understanding. So why the big secrecy of these organizations? Why not share the knowledge? The answer is simple. Knowledge is power, and power in the wrong hands, especially this type of knowledge and power, could bring the world back to the Dark Ages. Democracy would no longer exist. People would be enslaved. Human rights would be non-existent, and religious freedom would cease. The Egyptian pharaoh Tutankhamun was a Freemason and holder of divine knowledge. The clues are found in his tomb as evidence, such as the Freemason apron, his dues to the lodge of two jars of honey, and in the mummy bandages was the dagger, Freemason Tyler. There is a life-size statue of him, wearing the pyramid skirt of fertility that guards his coffin containing his sarcophagus. These items confirm his identity as an esotericist or Freemason. Previously, the Freemasons could trace their roots to Solomon's Temple, at least to the Knights Templar. But now, as of this writing, their roots appear to go back much further, even to Adam, who gained knowledge from the flying scrolls. Scrolls containing ancient knowledge and wisdom written by God. There are other scribed copies of these manuscripts that perhaps still exist. The famous clairvoyant Edgar Cayce, also known as the Sleeping Prophet, identified another location where they are stored for safekeeping in the event of another world catastrophe. If such an event occurred, the records could be retrieved and knowledge preserved. This site is the Sphinx of Egypt. According to Casey, the Sphinx guards the halls of records. In an underground vault located in a chamber under the front paws of the Sphinx, the descendants of Ham most likely put copies of these ancient records in this repository for safekeeping. These records joined other ancient records put there previously for safekeeping and will also be addressed in the chapter, The Lost Civilization of Atlantis. In 1990, a geologist, Thomas Dobecki, sent vibrations down into the rock under the Sphinx's front paws and found sonar evidence of a rectangular underground chamber lying about 25 feet underground. Another researcher, Dr. Joseph Score of the Score Foundation, in connection with Florida State University, also explored the Giza area with ground-penetrating radar throughout the 1990s and early 2000s. He also detected a chamber some 30 feet under the Sphinx. It appears to be a chamber about 26 feet wide, 40 feet long, and approximately 30 feet from the floor to ceiling in height. In October 1992, a French engineer named Jean Carousel was using ground-penetrating radar to explore the descending passage to the underground chamber of the Great Pyramid. His equipment detected a structure that could be a corridor leading directly to the Sphinx. If indeed Casey is correct, then the Hall of Records would have to have some means of access. And what better way than an underground passage from the Great Pyramid to the Sphinx? Casey, in one of his readings, disclosed that there is a passage from the right forepaw of the Sphinx leading to the record chamber. In 1976, a Japanese research team using seismic and magnetic remote sensing detected a possible tunnel 2.5 to 3 meters below the ground surface near the right paw. During a full-scale clearing of the Sphinx in 1926, a passage under the rear part was resealed with masonry and cement. Two British archaeologists in 1980, mapping the structure, discovered the sealed passage. Ancient legends, as well as the Egyptian Book of the Dead, speak of underground chambers near the Sphinx. The fact the whole Giza Plateau is known to be honeycombed with underground tunnels. The problem is the Egyptian government. They have the exclusive right to explore the Sphinx for an opening to the underground chamber, but unfortunately have no plans to do so. Edgar Casey gives two other locations where ancient records lie hidden. One is under the waters near the Bahamian island of Bimini, and the other is beneath a temple in the Mayan lands in the Yucatan, Casey states. The records in this temple are overshadowed by another temple that is built over it. The ancient Mayan city of Piedras Negras, located deep within the jungle of lowlands of Guatemala, beside the beautiful but treacherous Usumacinta River, seems to be the site to which the Casey readings refer. According to Casey, the three repositories of ancient record sites contain exactly 32 tablets or plates, linens, gold, and artifacts relating to the cultures that created them. He indicated that mummified bodies are buried with the records. The 32 stone tablets contain the history and origins of mankind. When these records are finally located, it will take time to translate language and research interpretation. Let's hope that whoever finds these records doesn't take as long as it has taken to interpret the Dead Sea Scrolls, 45 years, found in the Qumran caves. There is another site in the Yucatan that is the possible location of these records. Votan, a grandson of Noah, built a temple in the Huehuetan River called the House of Darkness, wherein he deposited the national records. This information came from Nunez de la Vega, Bishop of Chiapas, who recalled the burning a book purported to be written by Votan describing the erection of a Tower of Babel and the above event. Nunez de la Vega further stated Votan wrote that he saw the Great Wall, namely the Tower of Babel, which was built from the earth to heaven at the bidding of his grandfather Noah. The authors believe that the Yucatan and perhaps the Bimini Hall of Record sites do contain texts of the Divine Book of Wisdom, perhaps written on tablets of stone. This was the source of the ancient Mayans' knowledge and wisdom, which was given to them by Votan, grandson of Noah. For those who would like more information on the Yucatan and Bimini sites, the book The Lost Hall of Records by John Van Auken and Laura Little is excellent reading. We discussed earlier in this chapter the Book of the Angel Raziel, which is supposed to be the actual text of the Divine Book of Wisdom. We concluded that perhaps the older portion of the text in the back section of the book could possibly be scribed text from the passed down copies of the original manuscript. However, the more modern part of the text in the front of the book were added and altered from generation to generation. The last writings and texts that contain some of the ancient wisdom of the Divine Book of Wisdom is the Nag Hammadi Library. These are the Gnostic scriptures, writings that appear to have been influenced by Jewish traditions and texts containing such traditions, Jewish texts that were influenced by the Divine Book of Wisdom. Gnosticism begins where the history of the Essenes breaks off. The Gnostics were out of the mainstream of Christianity and were described as heretical, but as we believe, only a people ahead of their times. Of course, only portions of their writings contain truths that we have referred to in previous chapters. In summary of this chapter, we have traced what happened to three items that were aboard the Ark, namely, the Rod of God, the manuscripts or books of Enoch, and the writings of the Divine Book of Wisdom. We have identified books that contain some of this wisdom available today. The surprise was that the first five chapters of Genesis are some of the manuscripts from the Divine Book of Wisdom, the creation accounts. We have revealed how this Divine Book of Knowledge inspired our nation's founding fathers and leaders of European nations to build nations on the concept of democracy, freedom, and human rights under the one true God. We have disclosed the probable locations of the whereabouts of these scribe documents and those organizations that also have scribe copies. Organizations that take a vow of secrecy as from where their source of ancient wisdom derives. We have disclosed how this knowledge has affected religion from the texts of the collection of manuscripts commonly called the Bible. How it has been incorporated into the temples of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, even influencing the Vedic texts and perhaps Asian beliefs. This knowledge has been all around us for centuries, and yet the spiritually asleep could not see the forest for all the trees. For those of us spiritually awake, good news. There is much of these writings still awaiting discovery. In conclusion of this chapter, just remember that just maybe somewhere in the basement of a dusty, dark museum or hidden in stone boxes in some remote cave or Yucatan temple, maybe in a Tibetan monastery resting high in the Himalayas, perhaps in a yet undiscovered archaeological find, could be in your great-grandparents' trunk in your attic, more likely in someone's private collection of ancient artifacts or in a sealed chamber of the Sphinx or Roslyn Chapel. More of these ancient manuscripts will one day be found, manuscripts that will rewrite the history of the world and the origin of man and restore ancient knowledge.